You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Welcome to this week's Corner House podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, your regular host and the person ultimately responsible for the programme that we discuss every week. This week, our focus film is French-Canadian indie Heartbeats. And also, Rachel's here and she's just got back from Cannes Film Festival, so she'll be filling us in on the highlights of this year's festival. We'll also be catching up with major international artist Rashid Rana ahead of his big solo exhibition here in the autumn that we're working on right now. Of course, we'll have our regular mini What's On guide. One of the Corner House team will kindly give us their recommendation of the week. So on to our film focus. Of course, I'm joined by my regular contributor, Andrew Willis. And also Rachel Hayward is here, as I mentioned before, so she's going to join in too. This week, we're going to talk about Heartbeats. It's a French-Canadian film by the ridiculously talented, in my opinion, Xavier Dolan, who is only 22 years old. He was born in 1989. Is that impossible? Clearly not. He's a former child actor, and his debut feature, How I Killed My Mother, was shown at Corner House last year as part of And Festival 2009. It became Canada's official Oscar entry. It was nominated for a César, that's the French awards, and it racked up a total of 31 awards worldwide. So we could say that Xavier could be a bit of an overachiever. The film itself, Heartbeats, it's about relationships and specifically the pitfalls of falling in love. There's a love triangle between Francis, Monia and Niels. And Francis and Monia are the best friends fighting over Niels, basically. As in How I Killed My Mother, Xavier himself plays the lead role of Francis. It's also a gay character, as it was in How I Killed My Mother. But this time, we're trying to find out, is the object of his affection also gay? And the character of Monia is a sort of mid-20s woman, an Audrey Hepburn wannabe, chain-smoking, maybe a little bit selfish, but still likable. Okay, so before we talk about our response to the film, let's have a bit of background. Andy, do you know anything at all about French-Canadian cinema?
Well, after the past couple of weeks where I've had to do a bit of genning up on Spanish horror, that wasn't very difficult. A bit on samurai films, that wasn't very difficult. Scratching around trying to go through my memory banks to try and think up of some French-Canadian films that I may have seen was a much more difficult task. I did come up with a few that I remember seeing in the dark recesses of the past. One of the classic sort of 80s art house filmmakers was Denis Arcand. His films are in French, of course, but he is French-Canadian. And so they were the ones that I really remembered. I think there's a kind of interesting politics around French-Canadian films. Obviously, there was a big independence and nationalist movement within Quebec trying to make it a separate entity from Canada. And that, I think, has drawn in some funding from places like the National Film Board of Canada. So there has been a kind of small but sustainable film industry working in French within Canada over a number of years. As I say, Denis Arcand is probably the most well-known director. Within Canada, one of the most celebrated directors is somebody called Claude Duter. He made a film called My Uncle Antoine in 1971, which is set to the backdrop of an asbestos strike, which was quite a tumultuous affair, I think, in Canada back in the day. That film is often voted as the number one ever Canadian film, not just French-Canadian film, Canadian film, even on like the Sight and Sound polls and things like that. That's always the number one Canadian film. Now, Denis Arcand, I think, is the only other person who's really vying for that sort of mantle of the best French-Canadian filmmaker. Corner House audiences might remember The Decline of the American Empire, which was released in 1986, which basically, in true sort of art house style, had eight intellectuals sitting around talking about politics, talking about sex, and basically just waffling on and on and on. Not my cup of tea, I have to say. He then made another film which was quite striking called Jesus of Montreal, again, which people might remember, which I think played at Corner House when it was released in 1989. Also then, following on from that, he made a sequel to The Decline of the American Empire called The Barbarian Invasions, another well-known French-Canadian film. That film won the best Oscar for a foreign language film in 2003. The difference between The Decline of the American Empire and The Barbarian Invasions is this little group of intellectuals get together again, talk about sex, talk about politics, but their kids are there and they talk about sex and politics but have a different perspective as a different generation. And then he's followed that up in 2007 with a third part of what's seen as a kind of Canadian, French-Canadian trilogy about the state of the nation, and that film's called Days of Darkness. So whilst there's not an obvious lot of things going on that we see that's distributed in the UK in terms of French-Canadian cinema, once you scratch the surface, you start to find that there are some quite significant filmmakers working in that field.
And Rachel, is there any sort of comparable films you've seen recently, or anything on a similar theme?
There's quite a few parallels that can be drawn with a film that's coming out very, very soon, a film that's out in a couple of weeks on the 10th of June, and that's Greg Araki's Kaboom. This title is much crazier than Xavier Dolan's film. It's, in essence, focuses on that kind of central three characters who are very fluid, very flexible in who they are attracted to, very polyamorous, I guess, is the way to put it.
Okay, so what did you both think of the film? Let's go to Andy first.
Well, it was quite a striking-looking film, I have to give it that, but all of the sitting around and kind of navel-gazing and will they, won't they, are they, aren't they, kind of got a bit tedious for me, I have to say. That is, of course, after me saying that 13 Assassins was one of the best films I'd seen in a long time. I think, in a sense, it was never going to be something I was going to warm to. I think, as well, it might be an age thing, because I did find it get quite frustrated by the actions of some of the characters, which I think maybe reflects the fact that, you know, I remember when Jesus of Montreal was released in 1989, so maybe I'm getting a bit long in the tooth for this kind of angsty, youthful sort of film.
Yeah, so me and Rachel were barely in double figures at that time, and we don't remember it. Rachel, what did you think?
In contrast to Andy, I really enjoyed the film. And in all honesty, it is going back over 12 months now since I first watched it back in 2010 at Cannes. But the film really, for me, had a spark. I think you can definitely see that Xavier Dolan is a talent to watch. And I think that, you know, having all of those different roles in the film, creative production roles in the film, I think it does work really well for me. And I think he is a beautiful person to watch. I think he's quite enigmatic on screen. Certainly someone I'd like to see more of.
I really enjoyed the film. I was really swept away, because I'm obviously also one of those young, hip 20-something people that the film's about. I loved its youthfulness. It's really passionate. Really, really stylish, beautiful to look at. It's in French, but it's not about people sat around talking about sex or politics in that middle-class way. They're still talking about relationships and stuff. Actually, they don't even talk that much. They're often just gazing at each other, but in a beautiful way. I think it reminded me, those flashes of many, many auteurs, particularly a little bit reminded me of Wong Kar-wai films. Like, there's a little bit of a reference to In the Mood for Love, when you've got that kind of the movements, the soundtrack. I mean, this film even at one point uses Jump Around by House of Pain, which gets a big thumbs up for best use of that song on in a soundtrack. As Rachel pointed out, Xavier does break one of my rules about doing multiple jobs on a film. So, you know, it might work for Eddie Murphy, but it doesn't work for most people out there. And on this film, I can tell you that he is the director, writer, producer, actor, costumes, art director, editor, graphic design, and a photographer. There are some other people involved, honestly, somewhere in there. How do you both feel about this, somebody doing all those different roles? Andy?
Obviously, with low-budget films, they might not have enough money to cover all of the bases with everybody, with different people. However, I must say, sometimes I always feel when someone's doing so many roles within a film, there's not really enough people saying, hold on there, one second, what about doing it this way? What about doing it that way? It just comes out one way. And in this film, I have to say, one of the things that I found a little bit frustrating, and I think in a sense is down to a kind of multiple roles being taken by Xavier Dolan, is his own performance, which I found at times incredibly mannered. And I think that maybe if there was somebody else directing him, obviously he's not going to let anyone else direct. He said the reason he started directing is because he didn't want to be directed by anybody else. But they may have toned his performance down slightly, and that might have worked a bit better. Or even if they'd have had, you know, just somebody around saying, you know, why don't you perform in a slightly different way?
Yeah, maybe. Although I sort of like that way that it's quite kind of free. It's not too structured. It's not too overthought. I think it's a great performance. and I think Xavier Dolan is a hugely talented young man. You did mention the low budget. It's true, this is his second feature. He did have quite a bit of trouble raising the finance, but actually he did get some money after shooting started, and I think it does look quite polished in terms of post-production. Rachel, what do you think? Does it look low budget?
For me, no, it doesn't look like particularly low budget. I think he's managed to pull off quite a slick affair.
Okay, and I think we've sort of established who's going to like this film, younger people, but will it appeal to anyone else, Andy? Come on, open your mind.
Well, I think so, because one of the things it reminded me of was kind of those late 80s, early 90s American indie films of people like Hal Hartley. Again, you know, offbeat, oddball relationships, kind of comic but not broad comedy, more character-driven. So I think people who maybe think back and like those sorts of films, kind of landmark American indies, I think they would definitely like this sort of film. And again, you know, people who, like with something like Submarine, who are kind of looking backwards to those kind of moments of passion and of romance in their own past. I mean, I think they would like to be reminded of it in this film. I didn't, but others might.
I'm sure there's moments of passion later on in life as well. I think something that those American indies have in common, Wong Kar-wai that I mentioned before, and Xavier Dolan, is a bit of a nod to a kind of French New Wave, that sort of early French New Wave, young people and the feelings, and, you know, occasionally a bit of style over substance, but that's not always a bad thing. Okay, so that's Heartbeats. It starts screening from tomorrow, Friday the 27th of May. It'll be on for at least a week. Check our website for all the times.
Art, film, books, food, drink. All at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for a little fun with our quickfire round. First off, best love triangle in a film. Andy.
Well, best love triangle. Well, I'll go for... maybe this is maybe not really a love triangle, but me... In the kind of tone of Heartbeats being a bit overly pretentious, but Louis Buñuel's That Obscure Object of Desire has Fernando Rey falling in love with a mysterious woman who's played by two different actresses, Angela Molina and Caroline Bouquet. So I would claim that as a love triangle, even if only in Fernando Rey's head in the film.
Do the names Edward, Jacob and Bella mean anything to you? Yes, my best love triangle is the Twilight film series, and I am totally team Jacob. Rachel?
Team Jacob too. for me, because you've been talking French New Wave and kind of the young kids making films, it's got to be the classic one, Julie Jim from Truffaut.
Great. And this one, a bit more challenging, your best French-Canadian film, Andy.
Well, as I was saying before, there's not that many to be drawing on. I'd maybe go for Jesus of Montreal. Maybe it's just because we don't get them over here, but yeah, I'll say Jesus of Montreal.
I'm going to have Xavier's first film, How I Killed My Mother, which I did really, really enjoy and watched last year.
I'm wimping out and joining Andy and going for Jesus of Montreal as well, because it's a good one.
That's fine. Best Young Director, Andy.
Well, I'll go for Alex de la Iglesia. He made his first feature, Action Mutante, I think when he was 23 or thereabouts. So he's definitely at the forefront of breakout young directors for me.
And I can't remember how old she was, but I know she's in her 20s. Sofia Coppola for The Virgin Suicides. She was definitely young, and I thought it was a really good debut film. Rachel?
Mine would have to be another precocious Spanish filmmaker, so Amenabar for Tesis.
Okay, so thank you, Rachel and Andy. Now, last week, the internationally acclaimed artist Rashid Rana was here. He was here for a site visit ahead of his major solo exhibition that's going to be at Corner House in October as part of the Asia Triennial Manchester. Christina, our programme coordinator, caught up with him for a few questions to introduce himself and tell us a bit about what he's working on.
Okay, I'm in the galleries at Corner House with artist Rashid Rana. So, Rashid, what influences your work?
I have always been interested in art history and also with regards to how different makers throughout the history dealt with the two-dimensional space. And I believe this has provided the basic fuel for my practice. So I started off initially with the grid paintings. And this is how my interest in two-dimensionality manifested on a flat surface. And that later on got evolved into the digital prints, the works that you're most familiar with, and the use of pixel replaced those initial grid paintings.
So what is it that currently concerns you, and how does that influence your practice?
In the last few years, I became increasingly interested in duality and in contradictions and paradoxes. And that's what I've dealt with mostly in my work and tried to look for those in contradictions, whether internal or external. And this device of micro and macro imagery that you must have noticed in my work, that large, there's a large image that is made of smaller images, and that relationship of large and small image is something that became a conceptual and formal device for me to document all this contradiction that I've been interested in.
You recently had an exhibition on at Leeson Gallery in London. Could you tell us a little bit about that exhibition and how that went?
I'm very pleased about this recent association that I've got with the Leeson Gallery. It's a gallery with some very good artists working with them, so it's a privilege to be in that group. And besides that, I got a very good response to the work that I produced for that show, and I'm looking forward to further opportunities to make work that is going to have more inclination towards form as opposed to more issue-based works that I've been working in. Perhaps I'm maybe getting out of that phase.
Finally, so what do you think of Manchester?
Interestingly, Manchester is a city where I have been many times, and there has been one opportunity or the other with regards to the arts that has been offered by city to me. I have done two site-specific projects here. I have done two residencies here. To be honest with you, initially I wasn't so fond of the city, but gradually it has grown on me. And each time I've come here, I like it more than before. Or maybe it is me who's changing, not the city so much. And I like the fact that the city has the energy, but it has the calmness, and it's the right balance that maybe I'm liking in this phase of mine.
Thank you.
So thank you, Rashid Rana and Christina. I'm the co-curator of that show, so I'll tell you more about it in the next few months. And you can put it in your diary now as opening on Saturday, the 1st of October.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Now it's time to get a debrief in from Rachel. She's just come back from Cannes Film Festival, so let's find out what she saw there. Rachel, tell us some highlights of the Cannes Festival.
It's certainly been a fantastic year at Cannes. Last year, the festival had a bit of a panning, really, for not having a particularly strong lineup, particularly in its competition films. But this year, I'm really pleased to say that not just me, but many, many critics and writers have been declaring the festival a vintage year. And there's certainly been a large number of films that I've managed to see throughout the week that I was there that are going to be, you know, modern classics, that are going to be fantastic films, and that our audiences are certainly going to enjoy watching. One that I really enjoyed watching was Lynn Ramsay's adaptation of a novel, We Need to Talk About Kevin. And for people who've read the book, it is it's a very tragic story, and one which has translated to screen very, very well. Lynn Ramsay manages to edit lots and lots of the text. It's quite a weighty novel, and she edits it very, very well to portray a very difficult mother and son relationship, and one that ends very, very badly. Tilda Swinton in this film is absolutely fantastic. I haven't seen Melancholia, but I would say that for me, she was robbed. She should have got the Best Actress award for that role. So other highlights, particularly in the competition strand, would be the Dardenne brothers, The Kid with a Bike, starring Cécile de France and a long-time collaborator with the Dardenne brothers, Jérémy Rémier. So this is, again, another typical Dardenne brothers neo-realist film. The film features a young boy who's around 10 or 11 years old who is desperate to get in touch with his father. The boy lives in a residential home, a children's home, and he's not had any contact with his father for many months. So his dad has basically done a runner. He's moved house, he sold his son's bike, which has left the lad distraught, and he's also left no forwarding address. So the young lad goes off on a hunt to find his dad. But thankfully for him, he teams up with a lovely hairdresser played by Cécile de France, who offers to foster him on weekends, and their relationship goes from there. Other not so child-friendly adult-child relationships can be found in an Austrian film called Michael. And I didn't know very much about this film when I watched it. I queued for 3 hours for it, because queuing is a major feature of the festival in Cannes. And this is a film about a paedophile, but I obviously wasn't aware of it when I first started watching the film. And the film is incredibly well done. It leaves audiences very, very uncomfortable, as you would imagine. And it leaves you not particularly judging the main character, who is Michael, a middle-aged guy who is keeping a young boy locked up. So, as you can imagine, you're very uncomfortable both with what you're seeing, but also the emotions that you have towards the characters as well is particularly difficult. There's two other films I'd like to talk about. One is The Artist. This was the most talked about, the most feel-good film of the festival. It was talked about early on that it was never going to win the Palme d'Or because it was so light. It's not particularly an academic or heavy film, but it's incredibly enjoyable and one that audiences are really going to love. I certainly did. It's a film about about making a film. It's about the arrival of sound and a lead actor who can't cope with the arrival of sound. So you're very much kind of singing in the rain type territory. But the film is silent, apart from some really well done effects. And you have, it's black and white, and you have a wonderful lead performance, which is reminiscent of so many matinee idols. And you've also, for you, Sarah, got the best dog in any film that was in Cannes this year, ever.
Yay.
And then the final film that I wanted to talk about was, well, it's a bad note to end on, but it's my disappointment of the competition, really. And this is an Australian film called Sleeping Beauty. And this is about a young female student, who, for reasons that aren't really made very clear, becomes embroiled in seedy side of waitressing. So she answers an advert in a university newspaper to become a waitress, essentially, in a really isolated, mysterious country house, which seems to be inhabited by lots of dusty old grey men. And basically, she becomes their Sleeping Beauty. She's drugged, she sleeps, and they sleep in the bed with her. And so she starts to become quite disturbed about what they might be doing to her or with her when she's asleep. The lead actress does an amazing job at doing this very, very blank performance, which sounds overly critical. It's not meant to be. She does do a fantastic job. It's a very physical performance. She's pulled left, right, centre. But because she's such an emotionless character, nobody seems to really care as much as she does. Well, maybe she doesn't care so much either. But nobody seems to care what actually happens to her in the end.
Okay, so lots of films to look out for coming over the next few months, hopefully, to Corner House. What won the Palme d'Or, Rachel?
Terrence Malick's Tree of Life got the big award this year. Unfortunately, this is another one that I wasn't able to see because the queues were just enormous for this one, and for this and for Melancholy as well, there were fist fights to be getting in.
But Terrence Malick, it's worth taking a punt on and watching anyway, I think, when it comes round. And finally, did you see any celebrities?
I did. I saw, I was mere inches away from Tilda Swinton, didn't have my camera. I saw Johnny Depp, did have my phone camera, which is dreadful, but I didn't actually harass any celebrities this year.
Okay, thank you, Rachel. Great report from Cannes Film Festival there. Now it's time for our What's On guide to Corner House and beyond. I mentioned this film last week, but I've seen it now. It's Senna. It's a documentary all about Formula One racing driver Ayrton Senna. And we're going to review the film next week, but for the moment, I'd just like to urge you, there's still some tickets left for our special preview of this film, and we've got a Q&A with the director, Asif Kapadia, and the writer, Manish Pandey, next Tuesday, the 31st of May, at 6:10. You can book directly on our website. You can also book ahead for a special workshop on how to create a new identity for yourself with artist Heath Bunton. Yep, you heard me correctly. It's a new identity and it's completely legal. Well, I suppose you have to use it in a legal fashion for that to be true. It's in the afternoon of Wednesday the 8th of June at 2 p.m. And log on to our website to find out a little bit more about that and to book your place. Finally, it's the last week of our critically acclaimed exhibition, New Cartographies, and you've got until Sunday the 5th of June at 6 p.m. sharp to see the exhibition, or perhaps you want to revisit it before it goes. And over the next few weeks, we'll tell you about our new exhibitions that open at the end of June too. Finally, it's time for our recommendation of the week. Let's hear from Ella Swain, our programme and communications assistant.
I've got two things to recommend for Corner House audiences this week. Eurocultured returns to Manchester for the bank holiday. If you've not been before, expect art, music, dance and more probably performed across the streets of Manchester by acts from over 21 European countries. More details are on eurocultured.com. And if you fancy dancing your way through Sunday night, I'd recommend heading down to Homo Electric at Legends. They've got the legendary Tim Sweeney as this month's guest. So for tickets and more details, go to homoelectric.com.
Thank you, Ella. Okay, thank you, Rachel and Andy, for joining me for this week's podcast. You can find out more about everything and check times and book tickets on our website, www.cornerhouse.org. Alternatively, follow us on Twitter at CornerhouseMCR or join our fan page on Facebook. Okay, thank you. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast.